Valar Morghulis.
Valar Dohaeris.
Welcome to Southside Westeros, where we explore the world of Game of Thrones. From the Fist of the First Man to the Catacombs of the Red Keep, no secrets will be safe from us. Enter and forever be changed.
There is only one God, and his name is Death. And there is only one thing we say to Death.
Today's episode will focus on the Night King, and specifically, did he win? Did the Night King actually win? Now you're saying to yourself, D, what are you talking about? The Night King got defeated. Spoiler alert, when Arya killed him. Okay. But one of the biggest plot holes in the Game of Thrones was, what was this man's motivation? We never knew. We never got an inkling of what was going through his brain. Everything was an assumption. I don't even know. And I get that you know this, but do you really know it? Did you really focus on the fact that this integral character, never uttered a word, barely blinked. He never said something, so much so that the actors were switched in the middle of the show and no one even cared. He never spoke. His White Walkers never spoke. The dead never spoke. They just shrieked. We never knew his motivation. All we saw was his action. So we're going to go into the Night King. We're going to go into his history. And again, we're focusing on the show. We may reference the book, but for the most part, we're going to go with the product that was presented to us with George R.R. Martin and HBO. So the Night King was once a mortal man, from what we understand in the show. He was one of the first men, and he was around at a time when the first men were waging a war on the children of the forest. And for the first time in the history of Westeros, Westerosi history, the children were actually losing. So you get a small group of green seers, and they capture the man who would one day become the Night King and bound him to a heart tree. And they wanted to use him for a terrible purpose. Now, again, this purpose doesn't become clear until later on. When Leif, who was among the group, admitted that she pressed the cursed dragonglass dagger into his chest, causing his eyes to turn blue and turning him into the very first White Walker. Thousands of years before that. So she's explaining this to Bran and telling him that her people created the White Walkers to defend themselves when Westeros was invaded by the First Men. Now listen to these words. And I want to give you an idea of the basis of this. This is one of those underlying causes for everything we saw that we never realized. Westeros was invaded by the First Men. Which means that Westeros was already inhabited. Sound familiar? And it was already inhabited with a plethora of quote-unquote creatures who were living, for the most part, harmoniously. And when these First Men invaded, like most invaders do, they want to make themselves known, and they begin cutting down the sacred weirwood trees and slaughtering the children. Now, this White Walker that they created initially to even the odds, so to speak, and then you can imagine the savagery of the First Men. These are mystical, mythical creatures. We're not just talking about the children of the forest. We're talking about giants. We're talking about dire wolves, snarks and grumpkins. There's all manner of beast of the field operating and moving through Westeros. And these men are slaughtering them to the point that they had to create this White Walker. But just like in Frankenstein, which is a source that George has said he's pulled from, the White Walker turned on its creator and began what they're going to refer to as the Long Night. And though the Long Night ended with the first men and the children actually coming together and winning the war for the dawn, the Night King survived and retreated with the rest of his whites and his kind to the lands of Always Winter, the most northern part of Westeros, where they hid and plotted, supposedly, their next foray into Westeros. Now, the Night King was known to everyone or every house of prominence at this time, of course. And we may see this in one of the prequels. They may allude to it in House of the Dragon, but they're also talking about another prequel that could be considered The Long Night. And if that is the case, then they'll get into what noble houses were available at this time. But everyone knew this, so much so. Now, this is from the book. They reference it slightly in the show, but they never really get into this. But the wall was then built by the first men, the noble houses, the children, with the help of giants and mythical creatures. So everyone was on the same page at this point. Everyone recognized that this wall that they built needed to be built in case this ever happened. So that war for the dawn must have been 10 times worse than what we saw in A Song of Ice and Fire. Because when you imagine that, you're talking about mythical creatures at full force, giants and dragons and all of these things. And they almost lost. So this was probably 10 times worse. But we don't really see the Night King until season 4. That's when he first appears. And he appears in a vision from Bran when Bran starts to warg. He goes to the Weirwood Tree. And this is another point that I saw, and I don't think we figured it out, is the warging for Bran was almost an escapist mentality, an escapism that he was escaping. Now, of course, some people might say, well, that's obvious. You know, his legs don't work. And of course, if you could warg, why wouldn't you? They talked about it when he would warg into the wolves and everything. But I want you to really understand what occurred. This is a child. This is a child. This is a preteen. And he's been paralyzed since a very young adolescent. So for him to suddenly get this power, this must have been overwhelming for him. So Bran, being who Bran was, kind of a stoic figure in himself and melancholy in a way, he took to this with a not so positive mentality, which led to some of the deaths of those around him, because it's almost like you have to pull him along. But you understand that because he's a child. But we'll get into that in Bran's individual podcast. So he experiences a flood of images. And even though the Night King isn't physically present, he understands him. He sees the image of him picking up Crastus's sons from the ice altar. We see this, and we see him touch and turn this. So for those of you paying attention, you got it right then and there. Okay, this guy is making the White Walkers. And after he places his finger on this child. You see the child's eyes go blue, but you also see a kind of look on this baby's face, a look of acceptance, a look of understanding, ding, but a look of reverence, reverence for its new leader, reverence for its new commander. So we have to decipher his motivation from looks, from motions, from momentary lapses in the ice. This is what we're going to do. We're going to figure this out. So we see this. So we know here at this point that he needs humans in some form of fashion to build his army. It just can't be built from the dead. If that was the case, then he'll raise everyone dead and move. So his powers are limited or finite. And we see that even though he's a very powerful adversary, they're still limited and he has to spread them. He can't be everywhere at once. So what they're setting up the limitations of him while still not letting you know what his motivation is. So when that baby calms and you see them staring at each other and the skin start to glow and everything, we know that, okay, we're in for something. Now we go to night. We don't see him again until season 5. And this is when he appears when Tormund and John are coordinating the evacuation of Hardhome. This is when everyone's pretty much starting to understand what's coming. John knows. John has seen it. And Tormund understands it. And now his duty is to tell everyone. So John has finally got them to help him evacuate Hardhome. Now, this scene here, I think it served to show the opposite of what the scene with Craster's son in the prior season showed. I think this wanted to show John what you're up against and show the audience what you're up against. And I may be wrong, but I believe the Night King let John escape here. And you might say, well, why? Why would he let, how do we know this? We don't know this. I'm sure if he could have killed everyone and added to his army, then he would have. I think this is the humanity that may still be somewhere deep inside this icy man. I want you to tell them I'm coming. I want you to let them know that they didn't destroy me the last time. And that this time, I won't make the same mistake. He sees John slay one of his lieutenants, who, by the way, is or was a living person, with his Valyrian steel sword. But he wasn't very interested. He was kind of shocked at how good they were fighting, but he understands that I can clearly overwhelm these people. Now, they alluded to the fact that water somehow did something to the dead, but at the same time, you had dead pop up out of water a lot. So in this instance, again, if you have that many dead, you can create a bridge of dead bodies, like they did at the Battle of Winterfell when they put out the fire with just dead bodies. So he let him go. Now, why? I think it was arrogance. I think it was an arrogant move because it really didn't serve a purpose. And I think it was meant to affect the viewer in a way, give you an idea like, wow, this guy's powerful and he doesn't play. So again, short but sweet. We don't see him again till season 6. And he again appears in Bran's visions. He's witnessing the moment when the Night King is changed by the children of the forest. He sees Leaf do it, and she explains the vision to him and why she did it. Now, later, Bran makes the decision to experience the vision on his own, which is when the Night King touches him and he loses the protection of the tree. The Three-Eyed Raven tells him, "You messed up, Bran. You messed it up again." And this is the impetuousness of a child. It's confirmed with the mark on his hand, and he has to leave the cave, and that's when we say goodbye to two nice characters. A wolf, and then, of course, our beloved Hodor, who, even though he doesn't speak from the DMs and from the messages that we got, people want a podcast on Hodor, so we will talk about Hodor in the near future. So the Night King and his army overtake the cave. I mean, this is when you really see what they can do. And I know Hardhome was something, but you saw with the speed of these creatures and what something that doesn't have to sleep, eat, stop, or even think can do to you when being commanded by someone who may be mindless, someone who may have evil intent, whatever. Children of the Forest sacrifice themselves to help Bran escape. The Night King sends his armies in, and they kill most of the children. Again, they kill Summer, they kill Hodor, and they kill Mara Reed. No, I'm sorry. They kill Hodor. Mara escapes. Now, the Night King enters the cavern and kind of glares at the Three-Eyed Raven. And here is where I kind of paused this and looked at this scene over and over again. Because this is his arch rival. This is his nemesis. And what's being presented to you is that he's his nemesis because he's the memory of the known world. But I don't believe this. All right. I don't believe that that's the reason why he was so upset with him. I think, how do I put this? Well, it's plausible that the Night King wanted to end all existence. There was magic in place, and there were spells and things in place that kept him operating under a certain set of rules. So what I feel with the Night King is you can see in his anger, the Three-Eyed Raven is, you can see what happened to me. You can see what they did to me. And yet you can still help them. This is why I'm angry with you. If you understand, I can't talk. I can't speak. I can't let you know what's in my mind, what's in my heart. So you and then this little Bran out of everyone on this wretched planet can understand what was done to me. I didn't ask for this. I should be dead. I should have kids. I should have a wife. I should have had a family. But no, I was forced to be this creature. I was forced into this wretched existence because I was a man. And you, Three-Eyed Raven, you can see that. You're not the world's memory. You're my memory. You're the memory that I have. The only one that has that memory. And now you're training this kid who has that memory. And what do you do with that memory? You side with the evil Leaf. You side with the children. And I understand they were mad, but we needed a place to go too. We could have sat down and talked. You didn't have to make me into this creature. You didn't have to take my soul. What are you, Blair Witch? You didn't have to do it, but you did it. And you're protecting them. So you've taken their side. So there's nothing else for me to talk about. Now, the Night King taking over the world. Him taking over the world. What does it do for him? Really, what does it do for him? Answer the question. He's a being of ice. He can stay up in the north where there's no one and be happy. So what's going on? It's the spell. It's the spell that was related to that dragonglass dagger. The Night King has a finite time on the planet. He has a finite time, and he has a programming in him to do what it is that he's doing, which is destroy men, because Leaf, the children of the forest, made him to destroy men. Now you think about this. So because he was made to destroy men, this he's on autopilot almost. He has to do this. Does he want to do it? No. Why would he want to do it? Think about it. He hates the children. He kills the children. Because I want to break this spell. I think that's really his motivation. He wants to break the spell regarding this. And what I feel is that he was trying to get to the Three-Eyed Raven and Bran so they can warg into the past and find a way for him to break that spell. But he also had the programming. So he was moving forward, but he was trying to move forward with the intent to get to Bran. At first, he was trying to get to the Three-Eyed Raven, and he couldn't get to the Three-Eyed Raven because the Three-Eyed Raven was in that protected tree, protected by the same magic that keeps him alive and that gives him his purpose. He's like a bird. He has to migrate. So when he couldn't get to the Three-Eyed Raven, or the Three-Eyed Raven basically let him know, I'm not going to do nothing for you. So now I got to get to Bran. So Mira drags Bran through the snow. Uncle Benjen finds him, helps him out of there. We don't see him again until season 7. Season 7, you see his army of his whites walking south, the land of winter. Everyone's discussing how they can stand up to this supposed creature from the north. No one knows it but John. They're trying to get Dragonstone, and he's just moving. You see, this is what's amazing about this character, and that's why in the last season, where I don't feel as badly about the last season as most other people do, I feel that there was a really big missed opportunity in killing the Night King early. They should have had the war with Cersei first, and then the remnants fight the Night King. And then that last scene where they were burning everybody and trying to rebuild the world, that would have been the end, and that would have been a great scene. And we're going to talk about that when we do our podcast later on, recasting and redoing the final season. You all have an idea of what you wanted to see, and I'm going to let you know what I wanted to see. It may shock you. It may surprise you. But again, this character is sprinkled throughout the show. You see very little of him. And you see him when Jon Snow takes his guerrilla group up and they want to get a white. We see the end of Doris of Myr, and we see him kill a dragon, Viserion. And we see him wake Viserion, which was pretty obvious at that point. I knew it was going to happen, but it was still cool to see all the whites and the dead pull Viserion's body up and see him turn Viserion into another white. You knew it was going to happen. And you look, and at this point, what you're thinking is, wow, this guy has a dragon now. He has a dragon. He's going to be unstoppable. He's going to win. That's what went through my mind. He's going to win. The Night King is going to win. There's no one. that can stand up to this guy with a dragon and an army of dead people. And that season ends with him breaching the wall and the dead walking through. Dragons, dead people, whites, giants. Yeah. And then season 8 comes. And the Night King and White Walkers, they advance south. They attack the Last Hearth, massacring everything in their power. I mean, I see a lot of fan theories on Reddit. I spend a lot of time in the back rooms of Reddit, the Game of Thrones taverns, so to speak. And one fan theory I see a lot is that they should have lost at Winterfell. I just want to address that now. The theory was that it would have been better if they would have lost at Winterfell and then retreated somehow to the south. I want to remind you, as I stated before, that this is an army that doesn't need to sleep, eat, rest. It just goes. So if they would have beaten these people at Winterfell, there was no way that they would have made it down to King's Landing before an army of the dead. Maybe Daenerys and Jon, you can fit a few people on a dragon and get them down there. But other than that, no bodies. They're dead. So that's impossible.
So this wouldn't have been even a possibility at all.
So we can go past that. So we have them now at the Battle of Winterfell. Bran being the new three-eyed raven, he's thoroughly weird and staring off into sunset like an Alzheimer's patient most of the time. And you really don't know what he is thinking, let alone what he wants to happen. But you follow his lead because, oh my God, we don't know what's happening. And the battle goes like you would think it would go. This Night King barely engages. He doesn't have to. He has an army of millions of dead people. So for every one you drop, 20 take its place. For every one of you that drops, you just given them a new army, a new recruit in the army of the dead. And nothing was more relevant when Jon thought he was going to run up on the Night King. The Night King turned around, raised his hands, and every dead body raised up and then went towards Jon. You don't see it. And you still can't figure out what he wants. And then there's that moment where he turns around, he looks at Daenerys, he looks at Jon, and there's almost a smirk on his face. Now, why was he smirking? Because he was full of himself, because he knew he was winning? Quite possibly, but I doubt it. I think he was smirking at them because he's looking, I'm like, you guys don't know who, you don't know what you're fighting for. You're fighting for the status quo. You don't like this world either. I don't want to change it for the worst. I want to change it for the better. Because the world that you live in started with my sacrifice. So you don't even know what you're here for. And quite honestly, I'm about to finish what I came to do. And I think that's when he runs up on Bran. And I don't know, but I caught a bit of humanity when he killed Theon Greyjoy. He had to do it. He breaks the spear and kind of impales him. And he could have done a little more. But he didn't. And just left him to kind of die and to witness what was about to happen. So the Night King draws his sword when he's in front of Bran. And I think at that point, if he could speak, we would have seen what his motivation ultimately was. I think he would have said what his motivation was. And that motivation may have been to end the world. That motivation may have been to find a way to reverse his condition. Or he could have just been a mindless beast that was on autopilot. We really don't know. I think it was a little bit of the last two. I think he didn't know what he wanted, but he understood that Bran was the only one on the planet that could possibly give it to him. They sold you the narrative of him wanting to destroy Bran because Bran was the history of the world. I can't see it. I can destroy the world anyway. What would I care that you know the history of the world? Doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense. Why would that make sense? If I am going to destroy the world anyway, if I can pick up basically everything that has ever died and use it to destroy everything that is living right now, why would I care that you have knowledge of the world? Now, maybe it's because you have knowledge that may beat me, but I doubt that because I've beaten the three-eyed raven, and now I'm standing in front of you. So I'm not worried about that particular amount of knowledge. I just don't believe it. Everything that we know about the character, and it is limited. Again, I've gone through his whole presence on the show in less than an hour, and really less than 30 minutes. So from everything that we've seen, this can't be a motivation for him. I think it's smoke and mirrors. I think he's more human than you believe. I just think he cannot convey to you his human emotion. But I think that flame, that spark inside of all of us that makes us human, that's still relevant inside of him, somehow deep, deep down buried in that iceberg that's on the inside of him. And the hate that he still carries for the children. So maybe that's what it was. But he was specifically focused on Bran, and he was specifically focused on the three-eyed raven. How do we know that after his interaction with Bran, he would have kept on going? How do we know that? Maybe he wanted what the wildlings wanted. He wanted his slice of Westeros. We don't know that, and we never will. But we can debate it, which is what we're doing here. So I've given you some things to think about. They might be far-fetched. I'm not saying they're real. I'm not saying that for you to even change how you view him. All I want you to do is think and look beneath the surface. And don't always follow the track that the showrunners want you to. Because the stuff that's underneath the surface is even better. Now, remember, folks, go over to that Patreon because starting next week, we'll have our secret episodes. And those are only available to patrons. We'll also make them available, though, to anybody who donates to the Cash App or to the Buy Me Coffee or to the PodFan. So, hey, there's some. If you like this, you'll love that. I had fun with you on our journey. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to Southside Westeros. We look forward to you coming back and visiting us again. If you want to email us, you can reach us at southsidewesteros@gmail.com. You can also reach us at Southside Westeros at both Instagram, Facebook, and Twitch. We're SS Westeros at Cup of Coffee and Twitter. If you want to donate to the program to keep getting this great content, please donate to our Patreon or our Cash App, both are Southside Westeros. Valo Dohares, and may the Mother bring seven blessings to you all.